Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Hallie Hawkins, Green Party presidential candidate in 2020. And he's here to talk about the elections of 2021. Let's start off with New York. What do you think of the election results in Buffalo?
Well, I wasn't surprised. The poll showed that Brown was well ahead of Walton. So I wasn't surprised. As I looked at the campaign, I saw, you know, Byron Brown, the current mayor, really engaged in a vicious smear campaign against India Walton, who was, you know, a young community activist. And she didn't return the fire in kind. And Brown was a target-rich environment. FBI is all over him and his cronies for pay-to-play, basically extortion, you know. Give us campaign donations and we'll give you contracts and tax breaks. And that's the way Buffalo has been operated under Brown. And Walton didn't hit him hard like that. Instead, she kind of took his attacks and stayed positive. But so this guy that is you know, was defeated in the primary, probably because a lot of the people, that's a more informed, smaller electorate, knew that Brown was crooked. But that's the way I look at it. You know, she should have, you know, really gone strong against Brown because problems around him. I mean, his administration is under investigation by the FBI. Come on.
I look at it a slightly different, Howie. I think what they did to Walton is kind of like the same thing that they did to Bernie Sanders. The word socialist really gave the party establishment jitters. So they went all out to make sure that Brown won, like Biden won on the national level. What do you think?
Well, the way to deal with socialism is, you know, present it positively. Here's what we're talking about. Not run away from the term. And I think you're right. The Democratic Party primary, and it largely abandoned her. I mean, there was nominal support from the county committee, but it was like sort of pro forma. Many of the Democratic city councilors in the city and other elected officials, the state chair of the Democratic Party, Jay Jacobs, all came out against her. And then, you know, other leaders of the party like Hochul and Letitia James, you know, didn't take a position. So they didn't back their own candidate. And instead, I don't think they were worried about socialism. They were worried about the, you know, business they were doing with Byron Brown was in jeopardy because Walton was honest. And she wouldn't play those same, you know, pay-to-play games. And that's what they were really afraid of. You know, socialism, there's not much you can do at the city level besides provide good services and maybe municipalize a service like public power. And that wasn't even on her agenda. So I think it was more, she was not part of the old boys and girls network. So she was a threat.
So would you say that Brown is tainted?
Yeah, he's tainted, and a lot of people in Buffalo know it. It's just, you know, the establishment there, which included the Republicans, who are very conservative. That's Carl Palladino territory. A lot of them are buddy with, you know, dirty trickster Roger Stone. I mean, Brown ran a campaign like Stone was the advisor. I don't know if he was involved at all, but it was really vicious what they did to India Walton in their messaging. So, and then, you know, the Democrats up there, a lot of them are very conservative. So, you know, India was up against the establishment.
So you think the fact that Byron conducted a write-in See, in Albany, there was a write-in candidate also who lost the, you know, primary, and she was kind of disregarded. So I find it interesting that the power structure in Buffalo should support the incumbent, where in Albany, the write-in candidate was disregarded. I found that pretty interesting. What do you think?
Well, I don't know the write-in candidate in Albany. I know the write-in candidate in Buffalo. It was the sitting mayor who had a lot of ties to the developers and the people doing business in Buffalo. And they put in over $1 million into his campaign. So everybody knew, you know, to write in Byron Brown if they wanted him. I don't know about Albany.
Wow.
I mean, you said he was the person was disregarded. Was this the person
uh-huh.
who was an incumbent? Who was at the center of the...
No.
Okay. Well, that's a very different circumstance.
Okay. So then what you're saying, more or less, is the financial powers that be to rule the day. Is that correct?
Well, they succeeded in ruling the day. You know, I think the India Walton campaign should have been going negative on Byron Brown for corruption. And I think, you know, when she got attacked for being a socialist, they, you know, the way Bernie did, you know, yeah, I'm a socialist, and here's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about it in terms of values. He put it more in policy, which I think, would have benefited her, so people knew,
seems,
you know, what it meant in practical terms.
It seems as though the party apparatus turned their back on Walton, except for Gillibrand and Schumer. What do you think? Why do you think the two senators came out in favor of India Walton?
Well, I think they wanted to protect their left flank from challenges in the future. And they don't have a machine in Buffalo like the Democratic machine does. They can go on the ground, knock on doors, you know, get the municipal employees out for the mayor. I mean, there were violations of the Hatch Act. Some of the police were in an advertisement in their uniforms. So the machine really existed in Buffalo. So, you know, the endorsements by people, you know, like Schumer, Gillibrand, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez didn't translate into, you know, people on the ground working hard for India Walton. The AOC endorsement reinforced what Walton already had, which was the DSA organization, Democratic Socialists of America, in Buffalo. But they're much smaller than what Brown could mobilize for the Buffalo Democratic machine.
Right, right. So would you say the machine in Buffalo is not as prevalent as the machine in Albany? Is that would you say that's a true fact?
Well, I'd have to study it more. I know the Albany machine is, some people say, better organized than the Daily machine ever was in Chicago. So that's a high standard. But, you know, from the results of this election in Buffalo, the Democratic machine can still get their people out. And in this case, they got all the Republicans out for the Democrats, too, because the Republicans didn't have a candidate. And the big Republican funders like Carl Paladino had been doing business with Byron Brown, so, you know, they were happy with him.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what happened in Virginia. Were you surprised that the Democrat did not win?
No, I was not. Again, the poll showed that it was neck and neck. It was going to be close. It ended up pretty close. And, you know, I thought running Terry McAuliffe, who's a conservative Democrat, who had been in for 4 years, and, you know, in Virginia, you can only serve one term at a time, candidate the Democrats could have put forward. You know, how do you get people excited and mobilized for a status quo guy that you've already seen for 4 years? So I think that put them in a difficult situation. And then you look at what the messaging was from McAuliffe, and all he did was say Trump, you know, trying to make the Republican sound like Trump. And the Republican was very good at presenting himself as sort of a suburban dad, you know, somebody a lot of the voters could see as a neighbor, even though he's a 100 millionaire plus, you know, guy coming off Wall Street out of Goldman Sachs. So he is not like your average neighbor. But McAuliffe is not one to, you know, talk about the very rich getting too much and not paying their taxes and that kind of populist approach. So, you know, and then on the education issue, McAuliffe put his foot in his mouth when he kind of blurted out at one point, parents don't get to say what's in the curriculum, which is
right.
Not even true, because the parents elect the school boards. They can go to, you know, meetings of the school board and let their views be known, and they're influential. So, you know, that was just kind of a blunder that he made. And it you know, really was used by Youngkin, the, you know, Republican, very effectively in his advertising. So that made, you know, I was not surprised that McAuliffe lost.
So McAuliffe is tied to the Clintons, am I correct?
Yeah, he was a big fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. McAuliffe's from the Syracuse area. His father was one of the leaders of the Democratic machine in Onondaga County for a long time. So that's where Terry McAuliffe cut his political teeth. And the Clintons have had retreats in Scanty Atlas that McAuliffe was at a number of times. It's been reported in the papers here. So, yeah, he was very much part of the Clinton machine organization.
So tell us a little bit about the history of the Terry McAuliffe in Syracuse. When I called you, you were saying that they were kind of segregationist, right?
Yeah, I found it ironic that Terry McAuliffe was saying Youngkin was a Trump racist, basically, when the Democratic machine in Onondaga County has tolerated extreme segregation in housing, schools, and employment. They've never made it an issue. It's pervasive here. And, you know, the Republican machine, too, is, you know, they're partners in that persistence of segregation and discrimination. So to have Terry McAuliffe as your anti-racist cheerleader against the Trumpites, I just found that ironic, given, you know, what Terry McAuliffe came up here in Syracuse and where he learned his politics and how that Democratic machine has never challenged the racism in this county.
So the win, or should I say the loss from Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, is that a indication of the 2022 midterms? Do you think that the Democrats are possibly going to lose the House, and this 2021 race indicated that?
Yeah, I think it's a harbinger. They got the general problem that the party in power generally loses. When you elect a president, you generally lose seats in the House and the Senate. So they've got that sort of general trend that they're working against. And in order to counter it, they've got to offer people a real reason to vote for the Democrats. And they've also got to counter, which they have not done, what the Republicans are doing with these laws and many states. They control 30, both houses of 30 state legislatures. So they're passing laws that are, you know, make it harder to vote, particularly people of color and young people that are likely to vote Democratic. They are gerrymandering districts so that Republicans can take the majority of seats with a minority of votes in a lot of these state legislatures and in their congressional delegations. That's ongoing. And then they're also in many states that enable the Secretary of State, if it's a Republican, or the legislature itself to overturn election results. If their people lose, they're going to not recognize the winner and put their own people in. They're basically going to set them up to steal elections. And the Democrats at the federal level could respond. There was the H.R. 1, the For the People Act, which would have banned gerrymandering. They replaced that with the Freedom to Vote Act, which still bans gerrymandering, also has provisions that prevent states from basically subverting elections and changing who won. And then there's the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which deals with discrimination against people of color in the setting up of election rules, voting rules. That was defeated in the Senate by a filibuster on yesterday. And before that, the Senate rejected the Freedom to Vote Act. The only way to overcome that is to change the filibuster. And the Democrats have not been willing to do that. You know, so far, besides some hints recently, Biden has not wanted to go after it. They got Manchin and Sinema who don't want to change it. So they're basically letting the Republicans go out and rig the game leading up to 2022. So aside from the usual trend that the ends lose, the Republicans are setting up the rules so they will get disproportionate representation and power compared to their vote. It's really institutionalizing minority rule, in which there are already biases that benefit the Republicans, like two votes per state, no matter what the population, that tends to way overrepresent the Republicans in the Senate. And then you got the Electoral College every 4 years, which does the same thing. So the Democrats have not taken that on, and it's getting late. You know, if they ever do get the Freedom to Vote Act that bans gerrymandering, a lot of the gerrymandering will have already been done. So they have basically let themselves be set up to lose in 2022. And that is, I think, you know, Virginia and also New Jersey, where it was much closer than people thought, indicate you're going to have this, you know, backlash, let's vote for the outs. We want change vote. And institutional rules bias toward the Republicans, and the Democrats are letting them do it in the states. The federal voting rights bills would preempt that at the federal level and make sure states had a ground floor of fair rules. But, you know, I don't know when the Democrats are going to get around to that. They're going to have to change the filibuster. And there's been no real strong push from Democratic leaders to do that. There's sort of little hints that we might have to do it, but it's getting late.
I know for a number of years that the Republicans have concentrated on state houses, but I don't think the Democrats have. What do you say to that phenomenon?
Well, I think, yeah, the Democrats have put more energy into the federal and particularly the presidential race. And they've let the Republicans beat them in the states. I mean, that goes back to the Obama administration, where it's really where the big change happened. Republicans gained a lot during the Obama administration, and the DNC at that time and the Obama organization really didn't counter that, you know, in terms of resources and organization and candidate recruitment and all the things you need to do. And so there was a real transition in the states to Republican control in the, you know, in many of the states. You know, the Republicans had control of the states where they're a majority, but in the states that were up for contest, the Republicans put a lot of energy in and the Democrats didn't. And now they're facing the consequences of that.
What I find very interesting is the Democrats, they didn't have any focus on that when they knew that the Republicans were doing it. Why is that? They're setting themselves up to lose everything. And the people, you know, they follow presidential races or Senate races, but not much emphasis on the state races. I just find that such a losing strategy. What do you think?
That's a good question, and I haven't really studied it, but off the top of my head, one thing I think is that the national leadership of the DNC and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, their national committees, are focused on the federal level. I mean, that's where both staff and officials' careers are based. So they sort of had a bias toward federal elections to begin with. And also the Democrats are, you know, internally more divided than the Republicans. You know, the Republicans have been a conservative party, and now they've morphed into an extremist, authoritarian, racist party under Trump. But they stick together, whereas the Democrats are, the corporate Democrats have the upper hand, but there are progressive Democrats who challenge them. So they spend a lot of time, you know, struggling between the conservative corporate Democrats and the progressives. So while they're doing that, what happened in the states passed them by.
But all of them know that the state houses redraws the map. And if the Democrats are sitting back while the Republicans are winning state after state to get a majority in the state houses, that is so foolish. What do you think?
I think it is foolish. And I remember Jesse Jackson, particularly in his 88 campaign, warning the corporate Democrats that if they don't start paying attention to the states, they're going to get clobbered when there's redistricting after the 1990 census.
And right.
He was ignored. He was seen as a challenge to the establishment, and his concerns were not addressed. And he was right. That was over 30 years ago. So this has been a long problem with the Democratic Party.
You know, they talk about, you know, you watch TV and you see the schism in the Republican Party, you know, the Liz Cheney, and there's a handful of others that are standing up against all of the Trumpers. But there's a huge schism in the Democratic Party, yet that's not addressed. What do you think?
Well, yeah, the Republicans, see, they're not so interested in governing. They're more interested in just being in power. And the contesting Democratic factions want to govern in different ways. So they have something to fight over. The Republicans just need to unite to get their people elected in terms of the mechanics of elections. So they are more focused on what's the best messaging and so forth we can do, whereas the Democrats are fighting, their factions are fighting over public policy, which is, you know, what you should do if you're elected. But the Republicans don't seem to care, you know, how the country's governed. They just want to get in power and represent the big money interests that back their campaigns. So it's, I think that explains the difference between the way the Democrats and Republicans function when it comes to getting ready for elections.
Wow. So what have you been up to? What's the future of the Green Party in 2022?
Well, my focus is on trying to get the Greens in New York ready to do this very difficult petition to get our ballot line back. We got to get 45,000 signatures in 42 days in April and May. So we got to find a slate of candidates for the statewide ticket. Be good to have down ballot candidates for the legislature who can help with the petitioning and our messaging around the issues we want to raise. So that's been one focus. And I've been spending a lot of time on the climate issue and following this Build Back Better, the shrinking Build Back Better bill. I'm writing an article on that, which will go out when they finalize it. So I know exactly, you know, what I'm criticizing or reporting on. And been working with groups that have been promoting ranked choice voting. It wasn't a total loss on Tuesday. Ranked choice voting passed in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Broomfield County, Colorado, and a city or town in Maine. So that keeps advancing. And that's good for the Green Party, because ranked choice voting enables people to vote for the Greens without worrying about spoiling the election and splitting the center-left vote so the far-right wins. So we got some victories on Tuesday, and that's dealing with the rules that the Democrats don't want to, except when they want to suppress the Green Party, which is what they did here in New York. They tripled the number of signatures we need, essentially tripled the number of votes we need to keep the ballot, increased fivefold the number of signatures we need in half the congressional districts when we submit a statewide petition. So, you know, it's not just the Republicans that are engaged in anti-democratic legislation. The Democratic Party in New York under Cuomo did that. It was attached to the budget under the, you know, when we were all locked down under the coronavirus. So that's going to be a big issue for the Green Party in 2022. So that's something I've been working on. And hopefully we can make that an issue and at least get the progressive Democrats to get on board for fair ballot access, ranked choice voting for statewide offices, including president, and then multi-winner ranked choice voting so we have proportional representation in the legislature and have a multi-party system instead of this two-party system where one party dominates.
So the next couple of years are going to be pretty interesting, and I know you're going to be following it, and you'll have plenty to say. So, Howie, I look forward to speaking with you again on All Exits Closed. You've been listening to Howie Hawkins, Green Party presidential candidate. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Howie, thanks for being on the show, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.